Sorry about that. Welcome, Ms. Blackburn. If you could identify yourself, Assistant Director. And today, members, we're going to start on the budget overviews from the agencies. Ms. Blackburn has willingly come in. There's been quite a lot of discussion back and forth between people way above both her and I's pay grade in regards to information going back and forth, and her ultimate boss, and I guess my leadership aren't quite on the same page yet, and we will do just fine for now. Representative Wiginius.
Thank you. I kind of think I know where you're going, and one of the discussions from yesterday sitting on our legacy committee, one of the things I've been just noodling about and wondering what you're thinking about is, and particularly looking at the introduction of bills, are we going to go the earmark route, or are we going to go the route of competitive projects or programs that have competitive with our legacy money and with the rest of our money?
Representative Wiginius and to the other members, I would say in the habitat area, I'm carrying a bill for the habitat area, and I think that's going to be pretty well laid out where it's going. I anticipate there will be some changes along the way. It's going to make some people a little bit nervous, but I don't know that they're going to be that. There's going to be some there. In the other ones, I would tend to go towards the area of competitive grants. That my own personal feeling, but that's going to be up to the members to decide. I believe that is a better process when possible, that we go that way. And I actually probably need to defer most of that discussion to Chair Erdahl, but maybe we can have that. We're meeting today in that committee, and so maybe they can do that. You know, they're going to craft a bill, members. I'm not completely positive, but I anticipate they're going to craft four separate bills: habitat, water, parks and trails, and then arts. And I'm not positive. I think historically, Representative Wiginius and Representative Torkelson, I think you both served on that committee. I think it was crafted together in Representative Murphy's committee into one bill before it got to your committee, Representative Wiginius, and
no.
Or it was separate, and then was it ever moved into one, Representative Wiginius?
No, it was the opposite. It was the Environment Committee that crafted the Parks and Trails bill and crafted the water bill, and then they went into Representative Murphy's committee where they were joined with the other two. But it was the Environment Committee that did the crafting.
Okay, and that's a little bit of a change this time around. They will craft the four separate bills in that division. This committee will have full oversight, full open discussions, and opportunities to do what this is, the Environment Committee, and they're a division of our committee that's doing some background legwork, so to say. But we will have the discussions here, very much so. But I'm hopeful that preliminary discussions will be done there in that division, and that we, if we have a chance to have those discussions there. Representative Wiginius, follow up.
Yes, follow up, because it seems to me that this committee will not be wanting to do a wholesale rewrite, and it would be better to have the discussion. Are we going to go the earmarking route or the competitive grant route? And I just think that big picture discussion would be helpful for us as we are critiquing or not critiquing and helping things get better or saying no as they come along. It's very hard to know how to talk about these things if we don't have that overall philosophy. And maybe other people should even, maybe they don't have the same question I do.
Well, Representative Wiginius, I think we are going to give direction, and I guess I'm open to what members have to say, and I would recommend that they weigh in with Representative Erdahl's committee and the members there if they have thoughts as those bills are crafted, because those four bills will all originate there, unlike, and I apologize for not remembering, but you're right, it was outside Representative Murphy's jurisdiction and how that was done last time. These will be crafted there, but also members, there's, I believe, Representative Wagenius, you, Representative Dill, Representative Torkelson, and I are the only common members there, so it's going to naturally be a lot of discussion here. And they're important, hundreds of millions of dollars, if I'm not mistaken, in the neighborhood of $260 million, something like that. So it's a significant amount of money. Representative Hilty?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a somewhat related question, but not on the same topic. We've heard a number of bills that we haven't voted on, which I assume you're intending to incorporate into an omnibus bill at some point, or presuming that we will have an omnibus bill in this committee. And I'm just wondering, is it your intention to kind of put that together and present it to the committee, and then we can vote to keep things in it or take them out, or are you planning on voting the elements of an omnibus bill in to begin with?
Representative Hilty, I'll use Representative Hackbart's bill just kind of as an example. It's got a number of different parts in it that a number of us have different thoughts about those parts. We'll have open discussion here with lots of opportunity for amendments to delete and add, and we will have, though we were just, the reality we had time available to us, so we had discussion about those things, but it wasn't so that all of a sudden it's going to come in an omnibus bill, here it is hidden, and we're not going to discuss it, because I think there's fishermen that want to discuss two lines and northerns and muskies.
Sure.
And they, Representative Hilty, are in your district, my district, and everybody's district, and they expect us to discuss it, and I think we will. And the reality, a lot of those issues are not partisan at all, so they'll but important to a number of our constituents. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wanted to follow up on something you had said. I was intrigued by the comment about changing perhaps the Habitat bill or legacy bill. And you know, as the last 2 years, that there's been intense pressure by special interest groups to not change a word in the council's recommendations. And noticing the track over in the Senate, it's already been changed, but I haven't heard the outcry about changing the council's recommendations there. And I think you said something like, We may make changes, or you're open to changes on that. So I'm trying to get a little more clarity on what you mean by that, or is it just that our role is to approve the council's recommendations?
Representative Hansen, I figured somebody needed to carry on the tradition of this body questioning that group's funding, and seeing how you're no longer on the council, I thought it would be appropriate that I take on that role, and somebody's got to get beat up by folks, and so I figure I've got a thick skin, I can handle some of that. So no, I'm being a little bit facetious, but actually I'm being somewhat serious. I intend to have suggestions, and I'm only one member, but I intend to have suggestions that I think that will deal with some of the issues. Specifically, Representative Wagenius and I have had a number of conversations about the concern that we're buying more land and expecting somebody else to take care of the maintenance and taxes. I think it's inappropriate. I don't think it's financially wise and prudent to do that. I don't believe that that's what those of us that voted for that amendment thought should happen, and so I think it's appropriate that we have those discussions. I've been open with Mr. Becker and have asked him to look at the possibility of scheduling a meeting prior to next Tuesday when Representative Erdahl is going to entertain amendments, and I met with Mr. Becker this morning. I think he's back in his office right now, pulling those members to see. I don't intend to blindside them, but I tend to be honest in the discussion that I think they're not aware of significant concerns. We heard Representative Draskowski's bill yesterday and a number of concerns raised about the amount of land owned in Minnesota and the consequences with local government and dealing with it. And there's challenges. We've got an attorney general's opinion that says some things about how the money can be used, and so we've got to work within that. But seriously, Representative Hansen, you've done good work on that group, and you've been one to question some of the things, and that's good. I've been on the short end of 12-1 decisions before, and I know when you believe something's right, there's nothing wrong with being one of 13. So I'm going to be very open with them, and for the most part, we're going to work together. But I think it's one of the spots where there's some money, so there's going to be a lot of interest in it. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. You mentioned the Attorney General's opinion, and I just want to raise a little caution from my point of view about that opinion. That opinion was done on a traditional PILT model, and I don't think it necessarily, in fact, I'm sure it does not apply to another model we might adopt if we were to give, as Representative Dill, I think it was his idea originally, so credit where credit is due, a host fee to a community written well, I don't think comes under that Attorney General's opinion at all. So I think there are other opportunities if that is what you're thinking about. So I just put that on the table for your consideration.
I think, Representative Wagenius, these are really good discussion points for as we kind of lay out a roadmap going forward. The reality, I think we're going to probably end up having to have those discussions next year. But that's not to say we shouldn't, in the money that we allocate this year, be aware of that need and figure out a way to make that work and show the folks that we're prudent and serious about it. But if we set a bunch of money aside and we have the next $6.2 billion issue 10 or 20 years from now and there's this great big pot of money set aside for all the counties, I see you shaking your head. No, you and I are on the same page, Representative Wagenius. We're not going to let that happen because that won't work. And we need to realize this, so we have to get a different model. I think it's going to take some significant discussion. I think it's one we're going to be able to work together and find a solution that works. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to be clear about the host fee model, it's a one-time upfront payment, and it goes to the county, the school district, the township, and it's their money. They can manage it either long-term or short-term, but it's no longer our money to be able to go in.
And I didn't clarify. I was agreeing with you. The other model I talked about, I think, doesn't work because of the potential for what I said could happen. If we mean for us to say, well, local governments, you shouldn't have the money because you won't be smart with it, and then you'll be asking us for more in the future. Let's just put the money in a pot, and we'll give you a little each time. Well, around here, pots of money tend to be looked at differently in different times, as we all know. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is a good discussion because it indicates there's probably some area of common ground on some of these things that we can find some solutions on and look at some models. And as a lead-in to who's speaking today, I think there's a tremendous model with the Board of Water and Soil Resources because they do have local elected officials at the local level who are accountable. They have better recording and tracking of what they're doing than any of the other agencies, and any Minnesotan can look up and see the conservation practices that are being implemented, which is different than the other agencies right now. So I think listening to them gives us a lot of opportunity on what could be the future, and it could be something that we can work on together.
Well, I think Representative Hansen, it's probably why they're here first, because they're so good and so easy. No, just kidding. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Since Representative Wagenius, you brought up this idea of money getting given to the counties, and local units or whoever is appropriate in one lump. You know, it was always my intention, as I tried to work forward on that, to give them the money in one lump that would represent the future of the payments that they would get, and that it actually, in some way, if we could get it done, it had to go into some kind of a trust that they would manage, into a corpus that they would manage so that they had ongoing perpetual funds, because as you alluded to, if we give them the money and they decide today to spend it all, they're probably going to be back here again. And I don't have all the details, I don't have all the thoughts, I don't know if it'll work, but I think Representative Lagunias, you correct me if I'm wrong, I think maybe you said at the Attorney General's office, I felt that they believed that that was a legitimate use for the money, making a payment for the future. But remind me how that opinion came out. If you
were Representative Lagunias.
Thank you. I would want to reread it before I would comment on it, but I think they were just looking at the old PILT model. That's my recollection, and that recollection may be very faulty. So to do a model that is totally different.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to dwell on it.
Representative Dill.
I mean, this is something that is going to have to, if we're in pursuit, and I'm supporting in a lot of places where we have additional lands, especially where they're really needed. I think if you had Mr. Pavlik here, Commissioner Pavlik, yesterday, you heard that he has over 90% of his pre-settlement wetlands well in excess of 1 million acres in one county. Now, I don't happen to represent that county, but I live next to it. I'm familiar with it. They're my neighbors. I mean, this is a significant problem. And in some areas, it's significant in the other way. I mean, look down in the southwest, look in the duck zone. I mean, that's a significant problem in reverse. And so anyway, without dwelling on it, we got to do something. We got to do something that's creative so that it works and we guarantee the future that these people don't suffer the consequences or unintended consequences. Thank you.
Well, I think, Representative Dill, that's why I think it's important that we show this year some of our hand and our intention to not necessarily spend all the money right now without making arrangements for the discussion that in a bipartisan way we see a need to be really prudent with our actions here. So, and I think you're right. We know it's different in Coochie County and Jackson County, and we have to realize that for sure. Any other discussion? Thank you. Ms. Blackburn, why don't you go ahead? We're good? Okay. Ms. Blackburn, why don't you go ahead and start? And it's our anticipation that we'll spend the day going through it. Members, as we go these budgets, I would ask that you do ask questions if they're pertinent. If you look through and you think it's going to get answered later, we'll wait. But if it needs to be asked as we're going, this packet we have will become part of your big budget books. It's about 25 pages long today. So if you could make a point to leave it here, it will get put into, if you put it in your save folder, otherwise the pages will make sure. And if you want, if you're making notes on it, you could write your name on to be sure it ends up in your budget book. But by, hopefully by Friday, we'll have budget books. They will be available if you want to take them home. I don't want to discourage you. We talked about that. Historically, if you're like myself, you don't know that you want to have the responsibility of keeping track of it because they're very thick, very big, and very costly to reproduce. But if you're like Representative Drazkowski or Representative Lagunias and you like to work all weekend on the state's business, you can take it home and look through it. It's lovely reading, has lots of numbers, so you can spend lots of time on it. So it's hopeful, especially for Representative Drazkowski, Representative Lagunias, and the other members. I'm thinking we're hoping to have them, if we get some cooperation from some pages, hopefully on Friday, they'll be able to put them together. Mr. Reinholz has been working overtime to help with that. And this is the important work, members, going forward. This is going to be serious stuff. Governor Dayton has laid out a plan. I anticipate we'll have a little different road that we're going to go down potentially in this committee. And so we're going to have serious discussion about what road we travel here as it's over the next 5 or 6 weeks. And so this is the important stuff in a finance committee. And Ms. Blackburn, I think we are ready to start. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Julie Blackburn. I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. And I do recognize that the governor's budget just came out yesterday, and here I am, less than 24 hours later, giving you our budget. So I'm going to work as much as I can with the committee staff to provide any additional information you might need as we go forward, and you study a little bit more the information that's provided in the governor's budget to answer any questions that you might have. Our budget is pretty simple, but for those of you who have studied our budget in the past, you will notice it's laid out much differently than it was in the past. We changed from having just one program and many activities to four different programs, and we changed all of our budgets along with that in order to better describe the type of work that we're doing, as well as the outcomes and goals of each one of those program areas. So for those of you who have been very familiar with our budget in the past and you'd like to learn a little bit more about those changes, I'd be more than happy to sit down with you and go over how we restructured it to this new program system. I'm going to go over the two-sided budget summary sheets very quickly. This is probably the easiest thing to do, and it might be one of the easiest budgets you have to look at, particularly since about 75 to 80% of our funding is passed through to local units of government. It's not overly complex. So I'm going to start first of all with this sheet that has the it looks like a spreadsheet that has at the top the 12-13 proposed biennial budget general fund. This is only the general fund. What we have there is on the left-hand side by programs we have land and water projects. There's actually two different sections under land and water projects. One of them is cost share. That's our traditional program. I'll provide more details later in our budget. That goes out to all soil and water conservation districts. You'll see that the governor has proposed a 25% reduction, which equates to $1.12 million. There's nothing there under long-term protection because we don't get any general fund for long-term protection. That is our bonding money, our outdoor heritage money, clean water money that goes to the easement programs. So there's nothing there for general fund. Under planning and effectiveness, you'll see that the conservation delivery program, which was in the past referred to as general services for SWCDs, that has been held harmless. That is at $6.37 million for the biennium. I'll go into more details about that also, but this is the structure, the skeleton of our entire delivery system out there, which has been stressed with a decade-long reduction. So the proposal this year is to hold them harmless. We do have three area boards that have 100% reductions, and I'll go into those in a little bit more detail. Also, Red River Basin Commission, the Minnesota River Joint Powers Board, and the Area 2 Joint Powers Board. So overall, that program area has an 8% reduction. Under rules and laws, you have the acronym there, NRBG. That's the Natural Resource Block Grant. I'll go over that in more detail later, but that is what is provided to counties to implement all state rules and laws having to do with their environmental programs. That was also held harmless at $7.0 million. And again, that's because that is the backbone of getting all of this environmental work done, and it was deemed as critical capacity that needs to be in place in order to do the work of the state. There is two items there, WACA operations, WCA, that's WACA, the Wetland Conservation Act. That's our work in order to put out, to implement the Wetland Conservation Act. We also are required to do monitoring by state law, and there's the next line item is for WACA monitoring. That is for $120,000. The next two items, the WACA DNR pass-through and the WACA 11 County Metro, are 100% eliminated. I'll go over those in more detail later. And then we also have drainage assistant operations, where we work with the drainage work group in order to implement drainage law and have oversight over drainage law. The last item there is our agency administration and operations, and you'll see that that's a 5% cut of $380,000 over the biennium. So that's kind of a snapshot of all of our general funds, the program areas for them, and the reductions, which is close to 9% in reductions. On the back side of that sheet, you'll see our summary of the change items for clean water. We have 7 change items. Most of them are projects and programs that we have worked on previously or are currently working on in the Clean Water Fund. In your packet there is, and many of you have seen this before, there is an 11x17 folded pamphlet that has the Clean Water Fund summary of what we're currently doing. Most of the types of activities that we have on this sheet are the continuation of our already very successful program. So I'm not going to go into too many details on this now. You'll see the summary. It is overall for almost $50 million out of the Clean Water Fund. I'll go through more as we go on through the presentation. So that's just the summary. That's the quick glance at it. Hopefully it's simple enough and easy enough that you can understand it very quickly. But, of course, I'm available for any kinds of questions. I want to go into a little bit about Bowser. For those of you who aren't as familiar with us, you'll hear this from us frequently. We have a very large local delivery system. We work with anywhere between 500 and 700 field staff out there that are implementing conservation programs statewide. Counties, SWCDs, watershed districts, you name it, we work with them. That's really important because they're the people who are out there looking at the resource. They're close to the land. They know what's going on. They know how to address those resource priorities. We're a small agency. There's 76 full-time employees right now. We have very experienced staff. Many of us have come from a professional background being implementers out in the fields, including myself. I'm an ecologist, and we have a hydrologist as our executive director. We have engineers as the other assistant director. We've got a staff of engineers, soil scientists, botanists, hydrologists. So many of us have come from working in local units of government, doing work, and now work in the agency. So we have a good understanding of what really happens at the local level. Our goal is to integrate those local resource needs with the state plans and objectives. What are the state rules, regulations, the state goals, and kind of marry them with those local resource priorities that maybe aren't addressed at the statewide level. And we do this through a tremendous amount of leveraging both local and federal dollars. We package programs at the local level with the Natural Resource Conservation Service, the Farm Service Agency, local conservation groups, local volunteer groups. Our mission is to improve and protect Minnesota's water and soil resources by working in cooperation with private landowners. The private land is really important, and it was part of the discussion that was going on before I started here giving my budget overview. The map on the lower left in the green indicates all of the private land. 78% of our state is owned privately. So that's where we work. We work where those local concerns are in the private landowner area. This map also shows, if you can see it, in the blue areas, where the TMDL, the impaired waters, are in the state, which you'll see is the area that's mostly privately owned. So that's where we do our work. Our agency organization, we have a 20-member board. The board is appointed by the governor and consists of 15 folks that are from out in the public. 12 of them are from local units of government, including cities, townships, soil and water conservation districts, watershed districts, and counties. We have 3 citizens, and we have 5 state agencies: Pollution Control Agency, Department of Health, DNR, Department of Ag, and we also have somebody on there from Extension Service. We have 76 staff that are located in 8 different offices. All of them are co-located with another state agency except for one, or another federal agency. And we are linked to, we have the statutory responsibility in order to provide oversight to the units of government and the planning requirements that they have at all of those local units of government. We focus on local implementation. You'll hear this again from us often. Why is local important? Local is the only place that you have land use authority. And we believe that well-managed land is the most important responsibility if we're going to have clean water. And so the land use authority, how we take care of the land, is critical to that. We have an established delivery system. Soil and water conservation districts have been in place since the Dust Bowl local units of government as far as counties and their land use authority has been in place for decades. So this is a locally managed water resource planning, those priorities. They embrace a watershed approach, even if their jurisdictional boundaries aren't on a watershed. They are embracing a watershed approach because we know that all the land that drains to an area needs to be managed similarly for the same goals. This is also really the skeleton, the backbone for delivering the legacy amendment on the ground projects. They're already there. They know what they're doing. They're experienced at this. So they are the great delivery system in order to really get that legacy on the ground and in place. We're going to talk about our goals and then our programs that go to each goals. And for each one of our goals and programs that has a change item, we will identify that on the slide. Our first goal, which is the majority, the overwhelming majority of what we focus on and I'll spend the most time on, is to preserve, protect, and restore water and soil resources. We have two different project areas involved in this, land and water conservation, that's actually the projects, and then rules and laws. All of these work to protect, preserve, and restore water and soil resources. Projects and project management. This is one of the main sections that you'll see on our budget document. Here's just a summary of that budget document, some of the things that we're doing. In the last 5 years, our local units of government have implemented over 18,000 different best management projects, best management practice projects on the ground. These projects are focused on keeping water on the land. Maintaining healthy soils. Healthy soils really is the essential to everything that we're doing. Reducing pollutants into surface and groundwater. Ensuring biological diversity and maintaining the stream integrity. Those are really our five main areas that we focus on when we're doing these projects and practices. We also are very engaged in flood recovery disaster assistance. Many of the flood recovery bills that have come forward use our local delivery system in order to go out there and address those flood areas. They're there, again, they see the resources, they know the needs, they can talk to the folks and get out there and help. In our agency, in order to work on all of these projects, we also have to make sure that they're held to some accountability as far as their reporting, they're sticking to the goals of the grant projects and programs. We do the trainings, outreach, in order to make sure that it's implemented locally very successfully. And we have to do all the reconciliations and reporting on all of the grants. A little bit about our cost share program. This is a change item. Cost share program was established in 1977. It is in statute. It is delivered through the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, all 90 of them. Through this program, we provide up to 75% of the cost for a landowner to be doing a project. They are meant to address the high-priority erosion and sediment control projects that are identified in their plan. Some of the different types of practices that are done on this are native buffers, feedlots. We also have a cooperative weed management program, and we address waterways. A lot of what they do at the local Soil and Water Conservation District is to leverage that USDA dollar that comes to the state through the Natural Resource Conservation Service and the Farm Service Agency. Last year, this was in excess of $140 million that comes to the state through the federal program. What our Soil and Water Conservation Districts are really great at is packaging the types of programs with both state and local dollars and then marrying it with the federal dollars in order to get the best practice in the best location. And again, these folks with their established cost share program can go out there and take care of any of these flood issues that there might be that come up. They're already there. When the flood recovery dollars come through, we send it out to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts through the established cost share program. This is a change item reduction of 25%, which equates to $1.12 million. The next change item that we have is for the Clean Water Fund, and that is for our surface and drinking water protection and restoration grants. And again, that's very similar to the projects that we're doing right now, where it's competitive-based. It is projects that come to us through the local delivery system. They're identified as high priorities in a local water management plan or through a TMDL implementation plan. And when we evaluate them on a competitive basis, we look at their readiness, their ability to get it done, the way that it's prioritized in the plan, as well as the estimated outcomes from each one of those projects. We're building on the current project success. What you see in your packet also is this little card, the 3x5 card, that has the Clean Water Legacy, Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment on one side. If you go to our website and you click on that link, you will go see the stories, some of the outcomes in the projects, the successes that we're having implementing the Clean Water Fund right now. So it's different than our other programs, and it is statewide, it is competitive, and we know that we're funding the best of the best. That project is for that change item is for $25 million. The next change item is also for the Clean Water Fund. This is for the conservation drainage project. In the current biennium, we have $313,000 available for this program, and we had requests for well over $2 million for this program. So it is highly sought after. We have over 21,000 miles of public drainage systems in this state. And when we talk about maintaining hydrology, keeping water on the land, keeping soil out of our waterways, this is a really important program. What you see on the slide is a riparian buffer that has been compromised that's leading to all kinds of soil going into the ditch. You also see a two-stage ditch design that's meant to not only hold water but also provide for some biological integrity. You see some different ways that we're working on keeping water on the land. These projects must involve evaluation and outreach. We want to make sure that lots of folks understand how to do this and are adopting these practices. So this program includes those types of outreach and evaluation measures, and this change item is for $2 million. The next change item is also for Clean Water Fund. It's citizen and community participation grants. When we go through our competitive process, we're looking at projects that are identified as high priority in local water management plans and TMDL implementation plans. There's lots of groups that are very active at the local level trying to work on their lake. If they're a lake association, maybe they're a conservation club that has identified a high priority interest. This is the goal of this.
Excuse me, Ms. Blackburn, but Representative Hansen has a question that probably refers to your previous slide.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Blackburn, back on the drainage one, and I think in the narrative it said something about the work of the drainage work group and upgrading of the records and digitizing the records and preparing the manual. And so could you give me a little more detail on what, with your recommendations or the governor's recommendations for drainage, is it only the 2.5 for cost share for drainage, or is there other support for drainage work group activities?
Representative Torkelson and Hansen, this project under the Clean Water Fund is for on the ground practices. When it comes to our drainage oversight, that's in our rules program, and I'll identify that a little bit later. But I think in short, if I could answer your question, there is no funding available in this budget for drainage records modernization.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair, thank you. Ms. Blackburn, so if we have a large amount of miles of drainage and we have a large demand for conservation drainage, and we're only able to implement a small portion, even with 2.5 million. What other things are in the cost share that you're providing, is there any other companion type of requirement so that you do one conservation practice, but there's additional drainage that's occurring within the watershed that negates any public investment to hold back some of that water? The reason for my question is, as you know, my brother farms in southern Minnesota, and I was down there in the fall and down there through the holidays and noticed a lot of tiling going on post-harvest. So we put public money in to do conservation drainage, but in a confined watershed, there may be other drainage, other tiling going on that just completely negates that public investment. How do you reconcile that?
Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, as far as reconciling that, we'll talk about the drainage oversight program a little bit later. All of the drainage authorities in this state are either counties or watershed districts or joint powers boards of counties. And at the local level, they look at drainage law, determining benefits, and any kind of regulation or permitting that there might be as far as local drainage. That drainage law has been established for, 100 years, a century. And the types of benefits and the requirements in order to determine those benefits are a completely different process than what we're trying to do here. Certainly we recognize, that there's all of the tiling going on right now, additional changes to the drainage system out there. What we're trying to do, and that's why this includes the evaluation and outreach, is to say that there's better ways to do it. There's ways that we can do it so that it does balance out the needs of the farmer for increased production as well as the public needs for clean water. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, there's an additional public issue, and that's the cost. And that's the public cost of paying for flood damage reduction or flood mitigation or flood response or those type of things. So, and this is a statewide issue. Mm-hmm. We're going to be asked here probably within the next few weeks to spend tens of millions of dollars on reacting to floods again. And the reality is that there's accelerated drainage out there that's occurring that speeds up the water off the land. Although we may be investing public dollars to try to retain some water on the land. And people can do that on their own now. They don't have to hire a tiling contractor. They can buy the equipment and do it without anybody catching them. Mm-hmm. Be done quickly, and the snow comes on the ground, and then it's worked up in the spring. So we're going to have some discussion sometime about the public costs for a private profit, because we're being asked to pay again and again and again to react and respond to this accelerated. I think your effort on trying to do this is good. I'm just worried that the economic reality is that the acceleration for drainage to improve the land with $7 corn and $13 or $14 beans is a macroeconomic issue that's going to overwhelm any of our efforts.
Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, with drainage occurring across such a wide area of Minnesota and with our impaired waters and all of the challenges that we have with flooding, we certainly believe that it's a serious issue that does need to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed through bigger efforts than just trying to get conservation drainage on the ground. We have in the past tried to make sure that we have a drainage engineer that is out there doing work with the drainage authorities in order to make sure that there's an understanding of the cost benefits, both individually and as a society, as a group of Minnesotans. And we need to continue that discussion. It is definitely an issue, especially when agriculture is such a major, the major driving force in the state, and yet water, surface water, drinking water, is also the backbone of the state. So those two things don't have to be in competition with each other and work against each other. And I think the more that we can put into projects like this, the better dialogue that we can have, the more we will be able to address that.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. And just a comment from the chair, there's seems to be an assumption behind your question, Representative Hansen, that all drainage is bad and all drainage has a negative impact on the environment. I don't think we have the data to back that assumption up. Drainage has many positive benefits and the net effect on the environment is one that we need to examine more closely. This assumption that every foot of tile that goes in the ground has a negative impact on the environment, I don't think is entirely fair. So I would caution you.
Mr. Chair, I think you may have misheard me, because I was talking about, I didn't address the environmental cost. I was addressing the public cost. The public cost for paying for flood response. That's a different than an environmental quality issue. And we have, over the last few years, spent tens of millions of dollars, and we're going to be asked to spend tens of millions more reacting with flood damage dollars. And I don't think there are absolutes in this. I think you're correct on that. It's not all one way or the other. But we're going to be asked, the taxpayers of the country and the taxpayers of the state are going to be asked to spend over $1 billion up in the Red River Valley to build a ditch around Moorhead. But there's no discussion of drainage. It's just put the public dollar in, pay for it. And there has to be some discussion about reasons why we have flood reactions that we do. Not all one way or the other, but there is a component here that isn't on the table.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. I would just caution, even your assumption that all tile leads to more flooding, I think, is not necessarily appropriate either. I do understand the discussions that need to happen about the effect of drainage on flooding, and the potential positive benefits of holding water on the landscape, I think, are discussions that we can, should, and will have. If we can avoid big ditches by holding more water temporarily on the landscape, I think it would be a great benefit, not only to flooding impacts, but also to water quality. So as we move ahead in this discussion, I hope we all keep an open mind don't make assumptions that the assumption I'm afraid of is that we assume that all tiling is bad, and I don't think we can go quite that far. Representative Bouguinas, I believe you have a question.
I did. I was on the next slide, but before we leave this, I'm glad we're going to have this discussion, because what I hear more and more with the flooding is, what are you doing to prevent it? The big question, what are you doing to prevent it? Do we just continue to pay to clean up? So having that underlying discussion of prevention is probably a good one, and I'm glad you're on that. But I think people are going to not be satisfied with just talking about it. But my question was on the next slide, if I can.
Representative Bouguinas, if I could just interrupt you for a moment. I believe Representative Quam has a question relating to the drainage conversation.
Yes, Mr. Chair. If you look at the different areas, and I've seen history that shows there's flooding in the Civil War days and throughout the history of the state. Look at what around the Rochester area. I was there when they had the flood and was bucketing mud out of the houses. They did a plan. They came forward, asked for sales tax money, and they implemented something. This last flood that went through and the flood before, they didn't have an issue because they went through and did preventative action. I think what we need to do is help the local groups and areas come up with a preventative plan and stop the reactive, and I think it's a much smarter area, and I have no problem with assisting them with the people that understand water here and drainage with helping evolve that plan and then supporting, a local sales tax or whatever, to get out of this, because it is bad all around. And if it's annual, then you need to do some systems. So I agree there's an issue. I just disagree that it's all from some practices. And I think, we should work together and maybe we can come up with something.
Thank you, Representative Quam. I'm going to take one more drainage comment from Representative Drazkowski. I believe that's a topic you want to address, and then we're going to move on.
It is, Mr. Chair, and thank you. Representative Quam, you bring up a good point, and One of the things we need to think about, too, is where we target these dollars, Representative Hansen, and I think that's important. We probably should focus areas where we can get the best use of those dollars, because the reality is, as was mentioned, anywhere in the state can be potentially a place that floods. I mean, the flood in 2007 and the flood in 2010 by us, those were flash flood events where huge amounts of rain, regardless of the type of vegetation that you had on the landscape, you're going to have some sort of flood. Now, will it be minimized or reduced because of those practices? Certainly. But I think about Rochester as an example, and they did have that flood project there. And in this particular flood in 2010, it was Rochester escaped without a scar. And the reality is, though, it exacerbated the problem downstream, which is my district. And so, I mean, those are some of the things we need to think about. The other thing I'd like to point out, and Mr. Chair, just real quickly, is the use of these RIM dollars. And in this last flood, we spent $10 million of RIM dollars, and we're spending it largely within the floodplain of the Zumbro River, at least by us, to help people take out of production land that was flooded under the guise of flood control. The reality is, that's going to flood regardless. If you get 40-foot trees growing there, it's still going to flood. If we're going to call it RIM and we're going to call it flood control, in that case, the upland area is where you would get the best benefit.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Do you have a wrap-up comment on the drainage and flooding issue, and then we're going to move on?
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a really great discussion. It's a very important discussion. It's a discussion that we're going to keep coming back to, I believe. We have at Bowser report, we're working on a report with DNR about flooding potential that's due to you, I believe, in March. We also have the Red River Basin Commission was required to put in a flood reduction, long-term flood solution strategy. That report is due in March. I think all of us would be willing to come back and continue this discussion. The issues of where we can store water, what does it do, how do you know, how much can you do that's preventative, and when you get, you know, 8 inches of rain in 24 hours, that's pretty tough. But what is it that we can put in place that's going to take care of those events that are manageable, that isn't a train coming straight at us? That's the kind of thing that we need to manage and look at.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Representative Wagenius, I believe you had a question on the next issue. Would you like to go ahead with that?
It was the next slide, yes. Thank you, if I can remember the question. One of the biggest problems agencies have is keeping up to date on current science. I think you all have done maybe better than the average. But when I look at giving small local governments grants program, how do you ensure that what they are doing is the most up-to-date science-wise?
That's a great question, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius. As far as this program, the way that we envision this program going out is that it would still be overseen by one of the local units of government that we currently work with. The policies that we have in place are to ensure that they are meeting technical standards, including the field office technical guide, any of the stormwater guides that are out there that are implemented by the MPCA. All of these practices go through rigorous evaluation. And so we don't see that these community groups would be any different as far as the practice evaluation, the type of practice that you're putting in place. What we're showing here on this slide is a group of Lake Association people doing a project and getting excited about protecting their water. And that's what we're talking about, making sure that there's enough technical oversight, evaluation, planning, implementation, but that folks are doing it, folks that care about their local resource. And we believe that that's very important for the long-term sustainability of clean water. People have to care. So we don't think there's a compromise at all of the technical capability. It's just kind of the local ownership.
A follow-up, Representative Wagenius?
Well, okay, I get it. I mean, if you all are keeping that good a handle on it, then that's good. My next question is, so we're setting aside $2.5 million for this. I have no context here. portion of a, are you targeting it to a particular watershed so we can see that this whole watershed is going to clean up? Is it just scattershot? If it's scattershot, how much of this scattershot are we going to have to do over the next 20 years to make a difference? So it's making sure we just don't do individual, what is that phrase about individual acts of, random acts of conservation that don't have a long-term impact.
Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, we believe that these would, we don't have all the details of the program put in place yet, but what we would see is also doing a competitive type process where we would put together the requirements of what we want to see happen at the local level. It's still going to have to include local priorities, whether it's an implementation plan for an impaired water or whether it's a local water management plan, that the, you know, group of counties or group of watershed districts or whoever it might be applies to us. We rank all of them together as far as their ability to target local resource concerns utilizing citizen and community groups. So it's still the same, same kind of goal. It's just engaging those citizens and doing that. So we would still be evaluating all the proposals that come forward. We would identify the criteria of what we want in that proposal that has to involve local priorities and implementation of local concerns.
One more follow-up. Uh-huh. Representative, I know I've reminded you of this before, but we do have decorum here.
Pardon?
Please address the chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Ms. Blackburn, I think the chair just made me forget my question. So I'll remember it and come back to it later. And
I assure you that was not my intent, Representative McGinnis. I believe Representative Falk has a question. We'll want to move along here soon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Blackburn, I've got a, I appreciate the thinking outside the box here, trying to form collaborative partnerships and to look at ways that you can further enhance the outreach. But I also realize that sometimes thinking inside the box works too when we actually know things work. I spoke with my Area 2 people yesterday, the executive director, in fact, and I'm disappointed to see that their funding has been essentially zeroed out. And that's been a very successful organization that basically all they do is flood control and flood prevention in a area of the state that's got fairly, trying to think of the right adjective, but it's got steep terrain and flood events can occur quite quickly, and they've been very successful. And kind of the thought was, as I understood, that, well, we'll just push this off and to funding that organization to the local units of government. But I need to remind people that you're also dealing with some of the poorest counties in the state and the local governments that have been continually strapped. And with the proposed cuts to local government aid and all of the other resources, there just isn't the ability to backfill those gaps. And so I'm really a bit perplexed that there are these all these new initiatives here when we know certain things that have already worked, and we're zeroing out the things that have worked in favor of new projects that we have no guarantee that they're going to offer any type of protection or any type of result.
Ms. Black.
Mr. Chair and Representative Falk, we have under our general fund reductions, almost 10% reduction. The area boards that have been created, and there are many of them throughout the state, and some of them are funded through DNR, some of them through us, some of them through different groups. They were created in a time, and the state was funding them in a time where we had more general fund. And we recognize that, and for the Area 2 Board, it's a significant cut to their administration funds. It's as far as their overall funds that they have available. And we appreciate that. However, we do have to make these cuts. And when we look at the priorities statewide as far as all of the local delivery system, we needed to make sure that the entire system wasn't compromised. They do have the ability to generate different types of funding. They can apply for the funding that we have available. This that we're talking about right here is from the Clean Water Fund and can't necessarily be used for those purposes. I don't have a great answer as far as what it's going to result in at that local level, but those area boards do have the abilities to generate some funds locally, and we still wanted to make sure that there was that statewide capacity put in place as far as soil and water conservation districts and the counties doing that backbone work for the state rules and regulations.
Representative Falk, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Ms. Blackburn, I do appreciate your comments, although I do, you know, disagree with kind of the direction a little bit, and I just want the record to reflect that, mm-hmm. that I do think that seriously hamstringing some of these entities that have worked very well in a very, very narrow-focused area in areas where we have major concerns that, you know, shutting down or defunding some of these areas can have monumental consequences if the work's not able to be done. And we're going to spend a lot more cleaning it up later. So what may look good in the short term may not always be good long term. And so I just want that to be reflected here.
Thank you, Representative Falk. I believe Representative Wagenius has remembered her question.
That's true. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Blackburn. Back on the citizen grants. So we've talked about the science and the competitive nature. Those are good factors. It seems to me that one other factor I'm hoping you're considering in this is that the area or the is itself doing other good practices that maintain the lake or the stream or whatever, because I don't want us to be in a position of somebody, a community is messing up over here, and we're funding a cleanup over here because we're on a perpetual treadmill then. Dirty cleanup. There's got to be the local responsibility, taking local responsibility for that water body and doing the best they can to prevent. Once they're doing that, giving them money to clean up is great. But I think we've got to make sure that one of our criteria in giving these grants is that local community is taking local responsibility. Does that make sense to you?
Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, it certainly does. The other thing that we want to encourage in this, however, is early adopters. We know that on a lake association, everybody around the lake might have their shoreline that looks exactly like the curb and gutter that are in the streets of Minneapolis. What we want to do is make sure that we find folks that are going to be those early adopters, that are going to take the risk and go out there and do something that looks different than what's accepted on that lake. So I agree that we need to make sure that we are rewarding those that have really shown strong ownership in their local resource. But we also want to make sure we target areas where there hasn't been a lot of that so that we can start that ball rolling and get those early adopters on and start, you know, increasing the amount of awareness about practices that any landowner can do to try to help all of us.
A follow-up, Ms. Blackburn.
If that is, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry. I mean,
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Blackburn, if that is your assumption, then it seems to me that you have to be able to measure that that is truly going to be that the early adapters teach other people and it actually works. I'm skeptical. I'm really skeptical of that portion of what you're doing. If folks get together in a lake association and everybody says, we're going to do what we can, and we need some help with practices to fix some of the things that have gone wrong. It seems to me in a competitive grant situation, they should get first dibs.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, as a person who has personally managed several hundred volunteers in a four-county area of central Minnesota being early adopters, I know from personal experience that getting one or two people to start has the initiative, you know, creates the initiative from others to take a look at it and go, oh, okay, that's not so bad. I think I might be able to do that. We also know from the University of Minnesota Extension Service that they have great data showing that that's what it takes. That's what it takes in the farming community. That's what it takes in an urban community. You have to get somebody out there that's going to be willing to take that risk. So we can, you know, provide that kind of data, but from personal experience, I know that that's the case.
Representative Hansen, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Blackburn, and the committee, though. I think looking at water quality goals, it's good to provide some context that, you know, in the metro area, we don't have a question of early adapters. We are, to meet a goal of water quality, we are going to be, and we have been, the decisions made, and we upgrade our stormwater system. And we pay for that. There's no choice. There's no convincing. There's a decision made, and there's no need for early adapters. A decision is made, and we will spend millions of dollars on upgrading our wastewater treatment systems to meet the goals. And we've done that over the last 20 years. We've paid, you know, so on the question of ability to pay, we have people, senior citizens living in apartment buildings that are paying for their wastewater treatment upgrades, whether they have that capacity to or not. And the water utilities go up and up and up to help pay for those wastewater treatment. So we've tried this approach for 20 years of trying to get the early adapters. We have the early adapters. So what do we do with folks who aren't the early adapters? What do we do with the folks who aren't going to do it no matter what? And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, at some point you have to make a decision. And in the metro area, the decision's been made. We've paid, all of our people have paid for wastewater treatment system upgrades, and it's worked. It's reduced the amount of phosphorus coming out of the wastewater treatment systems. So we're trying another approach that we've been going on since the Groundwater Act of 1989, which is let's get to the early adapters and hope that things work out. $2.5 million for civic engagement, on first blush to me, that's a lot of money for donuts at meetings. I mean, that's versus actually doing projects. I think there's a willingness to try to make some things work if they haven't worked before, but the demand in your own materials is that there are people who are signing up to put in projects. It's not the early adapters. It's the folks who are refusing to do things that have a consequence on water quality. And it's not all, not a lot, but it's some. And so that's a lot of money. And at some point, we're going to have to make decisions. And I want folks to know that around the state, those decisions have already been made in many areas, and people are paying and have paid and will continue to pay to clean up their water without a choice of being an early adapter. They just have to do it.
Response, Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, I appreciate your comments. I also believe that the only things that we're doing with this isn't just getting the early adopters, but it is getting long-term sustainability for water quality, because you're getting a community to adopt and care about their local resource. And if you don't care about that local resource, and if it doesn't start there, we aren't going to obtain those goals. And there certainly are rules and regulations that apply to industrial municipal wastewater treatment. But what we're looking at here are new types of initiatives that citizens and communities are looking for. And we have a lot of folks, and I'm sure in your local areas throughout the state, including, let's just say, the Go Blue project in Minneapolis, that is about getting metro folks to do stormwater management in their own properties. And so that is risk taking, and it's not rules. It's doing something that is new and innovative. Once those practices are in place and once people care about it and see it can be done, we can continue to build on that. And as Representative Wagenius says, then we reward those that have done that community adoption, that are working on How do we need to take care of this? What this is looking for is our competitive process on the big grant program is really about those local water management priorities, the TMDL implementation plans. We have, just like all of you have in your areas, heard about citizen groups that wish that they could do something in their local community to show that they care. This is trying to get that bridge built between the local community and those bigger statewide goals, as well as the water comprehensive water management goals. So it's trying to really engage folks, and it is about practices. This is not about donuts, and it's not about meetings. It's about getting people to volunteer to sit here and plant on cold, windy days and hot, steamy days in order to take care of their local community. It is modeled somewhat after the Outdoor Heritage Fund Conservation Partners Grant, only it's a much smaller pool, and again, it's meant to address those things that are the local priorities.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. Representative Guinness, you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps there is, I hear people not hearing. In my watershed, we pay a tax. We still have volunteers. So we are committed through our tax system to do get cleanup done. That means I am providing a local match to something like this, too. But where we have had just a total voluntary system, which is what we have had in so many areas, results have been not good. I mean, we've been, so I think we need to get some bridge between what you are saying and what Representative Hansen is saying, and perhaps the bridge is where there is a local watershed that's already taxing itself, that maybe that is where you work with citizen groups and make these grants, because I am still skeptical about early adapters, because this we wouldn't be in the place that we are in this state right now if total volunteerism worked.
Thank you for that comment, Representative McGinnis. I'm going to ask our numbers man, Mr. Reinholtz, to talk a little bit about outcomes and numbers and how it relates to this conversation.
Mr. Chairman, members, in listening to the conversation, I thought it'd be appropriate time for me to go back to one of my priorities, which is, and also one that has been the priority of this committee for several years, is to make decisions based on results. I have heard results around here talked about in several ways, so I think this change item is a really good example of how difficult that task can be. And if you have your package, it is really on page 12, the change item in the package for the agency's budget. Let me just point out just a couple of things that I would say you should consider in looking at these. This change item is Community Partners Clean Water Program. It's obviously asking for clean water funds. So what is the ultimate goal is expressed in the rationale paragraph, where it says the long-term goal is clean lakes, rivers, and drinking waters. Now, in order for you to make decisions based on what are the best bang for your dollars to meet that goal, you would have to have measurable results proposed for this program. But yet, when you go down to key goals and measures, what you see is strengthening the public sense of ownership and responsibility and delivering programs to maximize effect. Those are general statements that are great, but there's absolutely nothing listed there on how you're going to measure whether you were successful either in those goals or in the ultimate goal of cleaning the lakes, rivers, and waters. So you can see you should be asking the question, how much pollution is going to be stopped by this program in a measurable amount? How many cubic tons of soil is not going to end up in our waters? How many particular things? Without that, you can't make a decision on whether the dollar is best spent here to clean up lakes or best spent somewhere else to clean up lakes. So you can see it's a challenge. This was a very, I thought, one to really point out. It sounds great. Most people say it's good. But how do we measure whether it did anything towards our goal? That's not listed in this change item anywhere. I would say you should ask the department to give you additional information on every one of these change items. Where are the measurable results that come and meet that goal? How are we going to judge next year, 2 years from now, whether this money met those goals without having a projected measurable result on each one of these items?
Thank you. Ms. Blackburn, a response, then we're going to try and get the train back on the track.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and Mr. Reinholtz, as far as the measurable outcomes, I think that's a great question. And what we have been working on, our interagency team, along with the other agencies that implement the Clean Water Fund, is determining our measures and our reporting tracking system. So we have gone through an extensive process, and it started with the Clean Water Legacy Act, where we were trying to determine on many different levels what are those measurable outcomes for tracking the clean water progress throughout the state. Those measures include economic, social, water quality, land quality. There's a number of different factors there. We just at the interagency coordinating team heard of the presentation from the project coordinator that includes all of those kinds of things. We just heard that last week. I certainly can incorporate those kinds of indicators, not only on the practices that we'll be targeting for this, which again is building on the existing system, the existing priorities, and then the multiple benefits of long-term citizen engagement. We certainly can identify those social indicators as well as the practice indicators and what those mean for measures and outcomes.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. I would like you to please continue with your presentation.
Okay, as far as the long-term conservation projects, what I was just talking about were practices, those practices that we put on the ground that have a minimum life of 10 years and go up to 25. What we're talking about here is that very long-term conservation projects, which we run through our Reinvest in Minnesota program, RIM for short. It's been in existence for 25 years. We work on conservation easements that have multiple benefits that include water quality improvement, flood storage and attenuation, again working on those kinds of things in the Red River Valley. We've been working on increasing the stream channel, putting big banks on each side of the stream channel in order to protect very valuable agricultural land from the impacts of flooding. We also provide a lot of habitat with these projects. We have over 6,400 easements, 230 acres enrolled. We have been very successful leveraging that federal dollar, the Wetland Restoration Program dollar, since 2000. We've leveraged about $260 million. Our property remains privately owned, which is different than some of the other projects. We do focus on wetlands, wellheads, and flooded areas. And along with this, in the agency, we provide easement management services. We have real estate specialists. We provide oversight to the entire easement program, making sure that every easement is managed and maintained. Here's an example of a project that was put in. It was actually the site of the 2 millionth acre project that was put in by the federal government. They had sites nationwide. This Lake Waconia project was one of them. This was previously a direct discharge into Lake Waconia. What we did was took this watershed area, put it into this restored wetland, and now it provides water quality benefits for Lake Waconia. On the right-hand side, you'll see some graphs there of the type of measures and outcomes that we get when we put in long-term conservation easements. On the very right-hand side where those line graphs go up, that's the West Fork Beaver Creek. That is the sub-watershed. Three sub-watersheds were evaluated as far as the biota and some of the pollutants in the waters. Based on the amount of land that was in conservation easement and the proximity of the land in conservation easement to that tributary, that West Fork Beaver Creek has the most land in conservation and closest to that creek. And you see that the biological indicators go way up, as do nitrogen, phosphorus, and those types of things. So This was a project that was funded by the Environmental Trust Fund. We actually have a proposal this year to go forward and do an additional long-term study on some of these easements and what does it mean long-term, particularly on phosphorus. In our Clean Water Fund, there is a change item for $13 million for the long-term water quality protection. This is building on the existing, the current program from Clean Water Fund. Two different programs there. One of them is that we target riparian buffers, and in the past we have targeted lands that are in CRP, which means the federal government has already paid for the practice to be put in place. We're just going to keep it in place long term. Targets highly erosive riparian areas. We also work to protect wellhead protection areas, wellhead sensitive wellhead areas. This is a map of Barnesville. I just grabbed one of them. These are all available on our website. The area in red is the highly vulnerable area. So we work to put in conservation easements in those vulnerable areas in order to protect the groundwater from contamination, particularly from nitrogen. This recommendation for $13 million includes a match for the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council recommendation for riparian buffers. What we're looking at that program is matching their $2.5 million and hopefully $2.5 million the next year in order to do multiple benefit buffers so that we're taking buffers that are up to 200 feet so it has the benefit of both clean water and habitat. If we're going to go out there and do it, let's see if we can get multiple benefits by marrying up those different program goals into the same practice. The second major category that we have under our first goal is our natural resource protection rules and laws. Just an overview of some of the programs that we have in this area, our Wetland Conservation Act, otherwise known as WACA, the Local Roads Wetland Replacement Program. We also manage and we coordinate all of the support, state support, financial support to local units of government to implement local resource or locally the rules and laws of the state, and we provide oversight to drainage laws and drainage authorities. So the first thing under that is the Wetland Conservation Act. Again, that's the state's primary program that protects more than 10 million acres of wetlands. We have a small staff that work on this program, but we coordinate with the more than 300 different local governments that are responsible for implementing the Wetland Conservation Act rule and law. We also coordinate with the federal authorities and local authorities, as well as the other state folks that are involved in wetland rules. We coordinate with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, as well as Department of Transportation, NRCS, Pollution Control Agency. All of them have a role in implementing the wetland program. We manage a wetland bank that is required as far as whenever there's any activities going on that that impact wetlands, they must be replaced. Many of those banks are set up and started by entrepreneurs. It's not a state system. It's folks that are out there building a wetland bank program. They sell those credits when there's impacts elsewhere. We do have a change item here, general fund change item. It's a reduction of $400,000, overall program reduction of 5%. The program reduction here was a program that was started in 2007, which was the height of really a lot of development pressure in the metro area. There was $100,000 per year that was provided to the DNR. It was a pass-through from us to the DNR in order to do flyovers in the metro area. And then there was also $100,000 available per year for the 11-county metro for enhanced enforcement. Again, this was put in 2007. The total is $400,000, and those eliminate those two pass-throughs. The next item here is our local road replacement. We don't have any general fund dollars here, but I did want you to know about this. It's an important program. It should be local road wetland replacement program. We provide replacement to local road authorities under the Wetland Conservation Act. These are roads that are required to be replaced because of safety issues. We get bonding in order to implement this program. What it does is it coordinates statewide efforts, so not every local unit of government has to do their own banking. We do the banking for them for all their roads. It really pulls together all of our resources and makes it a lot easier for them to implement their programs. What you have here is a map that shows our wetland deficit and credits throughout the state. Again, this is done through bonding. Where we have those deficits, we try to take those bonding dollars and target it to those areas. We do a request for proposals in order to build some of those projects, and we do build some of them on our own where we need to get the credits in place so those local road authorities can do their road work. We also have a memorandum of agreement with MnDOT that's been in place since 2005. We build the wetlands for them as well so that they don't have to have a wetland specialist in every one of their offices or working on all their projects. So we coordinate all of those activities. The next thing is the Natural Resource Block Grant. This is where we pull the funds from the DNR to do the shoreline program, the Pollution Control Agency in order to do the SSTS program, our funds to the Wetland Conservation Act at the local level, feedlot, septics, all of those funds have been packaged together in the past in order to just have one grant go out to each county in order to implement these programs. Trying to simplify the process at the local level as well as statewide so that there's only one grant, one reporting to meet multiple resource goals. And this is all, again, for local implementation of state rules and regulations. Under rules and laws, we also have drainage oversight. Again, you've heard this from me already. We have 21,000 miles of drainage, public drainage ditches in the state. We work with a drainage work group, which is a voluntary group of folks from all different kinds of interests, environmental interests, farming interests, as well as the drainage authorities. We work on consensus recommendations that we all oftentimes bring to the legislature. Many of them are regarding the proceedings which are in law. Those proceedings about redetermination of benefits, which we've already talked about a little bit here, repairs to ditch systems, improvements to ditch systems. Our work on this program also includes that we are required to get all the records from ditch authorities on their work implementing the ditch buffer requirements. We currently have two FTEs that have been working on this, or 1.5 FTEs. We do have our drainage engineer, which currently is a vacancy, and we've been seeking to fill that. But it is that drainage engineer that works on these types of projects. The second goal that we have in our agency, like I said, that first goal of preserving, protecting, and improving our resources was the majority of our work in the agency. Our second goal is to maintain an effective and efficient delivery system. None of this can happen unless we have that framework out there, folks that are trained, ready to go, whenever there's a flood, whenever there's an implementation plan, whenever there's something there. We have to have those people out there. We need those consistent relationships with community members so that there's a level of trust, so that there's an understanding of the local resource concerns, and they can package those together. So that's a huge goal of ours. Under this goal, we have four different programs: our conservation delivery program, local resource and protection grants, our water management planning, and also our training. Under our conservation delivery program, this has formally been known as the general services grant, which we felt really didn't describe what this program does. This is our program that goes out to all the soil and water conservation districts. Soil and water conservation districts receive, they're supposed to receive the balance of how they do their work is about a third provided by the state, a third provided by the county, and a third self-generated. These go to the 90 soil and water conservation districts throughout the state. In this biennium, the proposal is to maintain that funding that was in place for this current year, which is 3.185 per year, or 6.37 million over the biennium. These are the folks that are out there that work with the private landowners. They are governed by a 5-member elected board. They don't have taxing authority. We provide part of that base. The county provides part of that base. And they are those folks that are out there that are the primary delivery system statewide, because they do have statewide presence and they have the technical expertise to implement these programs. The next program here is a clean water change item, and this is for local resource protection and innovation grants. There's more details in the sheet that I gave out on the Clean Water Fund. What we're doing here is we're trying to put in some challenge grants, some innovative grants that really push that local management planning and delivery system even further. We have folks that are ready to go that want to integrate new water quality standards, new information out there as far as LIDAR, targeting, in order to make sure that they're planning on what they're going to do next with their conservation dollars meets the best outcomes. This is a change item of $4.5 million. Just to give you an example of the kinds of things that we might be looking for with this challenge grant, then this slide is on the Environmental Benefits Index. This is a project that we've been working on that's near completion. This was funded by the Environmental Trust and Natural Resource Trust Fund. What this does is it looks at, by using data that we've already acquired from the digitized soil survey, some additional work that we've done to identify water, the potential for water erosion, the potential for wind erosion, looking at habitat resources, coming up with an overall environmental benefits index that we want to make sure that we get out to local communities so that they can integrate that information into their local plans to highly target those conservation dollars that are coming forward. So these are the kinds of projects that many state agencies, University of Minnesota, are coming up with this great data. We want these challenge grants to go out to the local governments so that they can marry this information with their plans so we can get better targeting every single time we go into our competitive process and we have better outcomes overall. As far as the regional water organizations that we've talked about previously, this is a change item of reduction of 576. It eliminates funding to these three area boards and commissions. One of them is the Red River Basin Commission, a reduction of about $84,000 per year. This is a nonprofit group that's interstate and international. They work to develop long-term flood solutions for the Red River Valley. The Minnesota River Board, this is a joint powers board of 38 counties. They work to support and improve water quality in the Minnesota River Basin. And the Minnesota State University Mankato is the administrator of these funds. And the third one is the Area 2 Flood Control Board that's in the southwestern part of the state. That's a reduction of $120,000 per year. Again, as I stated when Representative Falk had his question, these area boards are all being eliminated. There are multiple area boards that are funded throughout the state in different ways. Each of them does have the capacity and ability to apply for funding as well as generate local revenue. This is an 8% reduction overall to our water planning budget item. Under our training program, we started a brand new training program last year. We hired somebody who is a training expert that has a master's in training and program evaluation and has really done a tremendous job of identifying technical training needs, organizational development training needs. And we at Bowser have adopted a definition of training that is a systematic acquisition of knowledge, skills, and concepts that result in improved performance. Okay, so it's not just information. We are making sure that when folks come to training, they are getting information that allows them to perform better on their job. The acronym that you see there, the WDCP, the Wetland Delineator Certification Program, we run with the University of Minnesota Soils Department. This is the type of training that folks can go out and get their delineation skills. They understand soils and redox levels in soils and anything having to do with the plants, the hydrology. We work with the University of Minnesota on that. We have week-long programs. We have refresher courses. We also have every year now, for the third year, a Bowser Academy, where it's only staff that are involved in implementing our programs coming to learn about those specific programs and how do they get better at them. So through these, we've had several hundred participants. We also are really understanding the decreased budgets that are at the local level as well as ours. We are providing this type of training through online tutorials. You can go on our training website right now. You can learn about how to do estimators. You can learn about how to do feedlot evaluations. You can learn all different kinds of things. We're doing webinars. We just purchased a new webinar software called Illuminate. We're training all of our staff on how to do that. So as well as delivering training, we can have meetings online and, again, try to address some of the difficulties with financial situations both for us and out there. We're establishing, like what you see on here is train tracks, trying to send out regular updates to all of our local units of government about the training that's available, as well as each one of these train tracks has some skills that they can work on right there. So we're really proud of the training program that we've put in place and think that is really building a lot of capacity out there. Our third goal is to evaluate and communicate the effectiveness of our conservation programs. We really believe that in order to determine these outcomes, we have to do regular evaluation, not only of the projects and practices themselves, but our local units of government that are implementing. We need every part of the system to be fully functional and engaged. So this is our measures, results, and accountability clean water change item for $1.8 million. This includes our performance review and assistance program. We've been going out to all of our local units of government doing an annual evaluation, as well as every several years an in-depth evaluation of how they're doing. At that time, we identify the critical needs, particularly as far as organizational capacity that's needed in order to get that local unit of government more effective. We also have in this proposal our e-link, which you'll learn more about. E-Link is our online reporting and grant management program that every single one of our grant recipients uses. This is how we track the funding as well as the projects and results. We are working to develop this to be public query based. So we do have all the information about our clean water projects online right now, but E-Link contains a lot more than that. It contains information there about the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's 319 projects, Clean Water Partnership projects, some of the federal projects. So when you go into E-Link, there's all the different kinds of practices and projects that have gone on in your community. So we're trying to build a way that we can make that available to the public through a query system. We don't have that capacity now. We have to build it. We need that investment. We also want to make sure that we determine the on-the-ground results of what we're working on. So as far as the performance review and assistance program, here's just an example on the right-hand side of what we evaluate for each one of our local units of government. This one happens to be for a metro area watershed district. We evaluate them every year on certain things, and we go in for that in-depth report every several years. On our website, you will see the reporting results of all of the 240 units of government and then some that are available online. This is an example of our E-Link for Web. It's really a great system. I even have my own user ID, and I go in there, and sometimes I can see what's happening in Cottonwood County or Roseau County. And it's a great tracking system, but we do need to make that more publicly available. In there, we do make sure that every unit of government reports the pollution reduction estimates that there are for each practice and project. We are working on estimators for flood reduction as well as pollution prevention. For instance, if somebody puts in a feedlot project, we have an estimator for that. That's very, very easy for us to do. It's been in place for a number of years, designed by us in the Department of Ag and the University of Minnesota. What we need now is to get some of the additional estimators there for things like groundwater infiltration, the amount of flood reduction that happens from putting in retention projects. That is a project that's proposed in this year's LCCMR recommendations to ramp that up a little bit, but we do track each practice through E-Link. Part of this recommendation also comes from the need to determine on-the-ground outcomes. In this state, we spend a lot of time and money and effort evaluating water quality, lakes, streams, wetlands. At Bowser, we believe that landscape indicators really, really are going to be the leading indicators of what's going to happen with water quality. We should be looking at how our soil is treated. We should be looking at the adoption of practices. We should be looking at how do we increase the adoption. We need to make sure that that land is managed, because the quality of the land is going to determine the quality of water. We haven't been making investment in the state as far as determining on-the-ground adoption or those landscape-level indicators of the land quality. So we would like to make that investment. We have had a history with the University of Minnesota Mankato doing these types of projects. We'd like to continue it so that we can determine long-term changes in environmental management. We also, part of this is to make sure that we are verifying those pollution reduction estimators. They're based on really good science. We need to evaluate them regularly as better science becomes available. And by doing all these things, we build in a better way to build, to manage our projects in the future, to evaluate them, to make sure that we are coming back to you talking about these measures and outcomes as an evaluation tool. As far as our goal four, we have a lot of money that we've put into long-term conservation in the state. One of our goals is to make sure that that investment remains in place and has integrity both biologically as well as the original easement that was put in place long-term. We have three different programs under this: our RIM easement inspections, our wetland bank inspections, and our restoration evaluations. I combined the RIM and wetland bank inspections. They're a little separate, but they're kind of similar. The SWCDs in our state inspect every single one of our RIM easements every year for the first 5 years that they're put in place, and then every third year after that. We have, again, over, actually this number needs to be updated, 5,600 easements. Our wetland banks are monitored every year until the credits are finally approved and deposited. And then after that, they're inspected on a goal of every 5 years. We have almost 300 banking sites in the state of Minnesota. Most of them, the majority of them, are in the long-term monitoring, meaning every 5 years. This map shows you the type of wetland bank monitoring that we're doing statewide. Our restoration evaluations, this is part of the new legislation that was passed, that we need to go out and make sure that our restorations are meeting the goals of the Outdoor Heritage Fund and Clean Water Fund and Parks and Trails. It is based on scientific sampling and evaluation. There's a technical evaluation panel for each one of these funds that are working together in order to do the habitat restorations. Our change item is for the 0.1% from each of those funds. Ours is the Clean Water Fund, and that's for $168,000. Our goal five is for efficient and effective operations focused on strong partnerships. You already heard all about our partnerships and the type of work that we do. So what I put in here is just the information about our change item. It's an administration reduction of $380,000. We already had 3.5 FTE layoffs in 2010. We'll be looking at keeping some of the vacancies that we currently have open, examining what other kind of FTE reductions we might need. We also, you've probably heard me say this before, I consider us scrappers. We go around and look for money from Outdoor Heritage and the LCCMR, and we'll fund some of the positions through those types of funding that is specific for those projects. We do have in place a 20% reduction, travel reduction, and we track that regularly and communicate with all of our staff about how that's going. We've been meeting our goals so far this year. And we also have a number of interagency agreements. For instance, our Working Lands Initiative person is a half-time position with DNR and with us. So we'll work to address these operation reductions through a number of different mechanisms. Overall, it is an operation reduction of 5%. And with that, I know very quickly, here's just a summary of our general fund reductions. A summary of all of our different funds, including the Outdoor Heritage and the LCCMR recommendations that are brought forward this year. And I know we're out of time, so with that, any questions that are possible?
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. I think we're going to hold questions. We'll ask you to come back briefly tomorrow if that fits mm-hmm. your schedule.
Yes.
And if members have questions about the Bowser report, I would ask them to hold them till tomorrow. We'll also be addressing the lands bills again tomorrow. Is that correct? Did you have a question, Representative Knuth, that could be answered quickly, or maybe we don't need to bring her
Mr.
back?
Mr. Chair, probably not real quickly.
Okay,
maybe.
We'll bring her back tomorrow, and if other members have questions regarding this presentation, please keep them in mind for tomorrow. Representative Hancock, would you care to approve the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. The minutes have been moved. I believe all those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you for that. The minutes are passed. Today's meeting is adjourned.